Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau. I just realized my tea mug, or coffee mug, is a flag of the Japan.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I just thought it was some red dots.
Well, that is the flag of Japan.
Yeah, there it is too. Wait a minute. The red dot is the flag of Japan.
I just thought it was a polka dot. Anyway,
that's a lonely polka dot.
I didn't say polka dots.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was it.
I was waiting for the transition. I guess there isn't one.
Welcome to tea talk today. Yeah.
When we're trying this charming chai right now.
Did you steep it too long?
Before the podcast, Wayne was complaining that he steeped his tea too long.
Which is possible, and then it gets bitter.
Like you. When the tea gets bitter, Wayne gets bitter.
Somebody steeped me too long.
Somebody needs some sugar.
All right.
I don't want sugar from either of you.
That's not a go where that can lead.
Yeah, right now we're currently having a new computer crisis. My new computer, which is seems to have lost all its drivers.
Well, they're still there, technically.
Yeah. I love how they always say lost, and we're like, no, it's still there. It's just in storage. Keeps like, what programs are gone? We're like, they're not.
And I got the fact that they're not gone. They're in a folder we can't access and do anything with. So they are effectively gone.
You know how I like to split hairs on semantics.
Yeah, that's when somebody's panicking because their computer has no more drivers, and they keep going, we've lost the drivers. And you guys go, well, they're not lost.
Technically.
They're still there. Can I use them? Yeah, so we got a little bit of a late start to this episode.
Yeah. Had an angry start.
Well, it's not your computer. Sure. I like that you're reassuring. Well, you still got your desktop, right? Yeah.
Hey, just try to look on the bright side. You still have a computer.
Onto a gaming-related topic, Wayne, you posted something on the forums?
Yeah, I posted on the forums a link to, I guess, a hack of the Marvel Heroic Roleplaying game, kind of taking the D&D flavor, I guess, or races and classes, and converting them into kind of the Marvel Heroic Roleplaying power sets. So it's essentially playing D&D with Marvel Heroic Roleplaying rules.
Yeah, I hadn't seen your post yet, but it sounds a really cool idea.
Yeah, I actually found it via Twitter. Somebody posted a link.
Oh, cool.
On Twitter, and then I went and checked it out and said, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've mentioned it before that D&D is kind of like medieval superheroes or fantasy superheroes, so what a great system to use for it.
Yeah, I thought so too. And the guy posted up all the basic races and classes from the 4E Player's Handbook, maybe a few from like Player's Handbook 2. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all pretty good. He didn't post up any way of how he got there, so... Again, you know, I'm always kind of talking about balance, but and they look okay. Hmm. And I would actually play D&D again if we did that.
Yeah, it'd look pretty cool for me as well. I don't think you two would want to play it. No squares. Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people would want to play it because it's even further from original D&D.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, I don't imagine there would be the Vancian magic system in this, and I don't know how well it would represent the powers in 4E. I'd have to take a look at it before giving it a bigger opinion, I suppose.
Yeah, it wouldn't be what people were used to if they were playing 4E, and if you like that kind of board gamey aspect of counting squares and having the powers to tell you exactly what they do, then you wouldn't probably like playing Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, and so then, yeah, you wouldn't like the hack of it.
So who would like it?
Someone who likes playing Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, or someone who...
So if you like D&D 4E, you're not going to like these D&D 4E.
It's kind of like if you didn't like D&D 4E, but you still want to play D&D.
Then you can play Pathfinder.
Damn you and your logic.
Or if you wanted a more narrative system with the dice pool thing. You know what? If you said, hey, the mechanics for Marvel Heroic Roleplaying are awesome, I want to see it in a fantasy game, then you would like it.
Okay.
Yeah, if you like very narrative styles and D&D flavor. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm still thinking about my computer.
I know you are.
We know.
You had
we
that
know.
Tone of voice, like, all right, yeah.
There.
Is there a point to this?
Yeah, the can point we just is, get this over with?
The
so
point
I can go?
Is, here's something cool I found on the internet.
I'm still thinking if my recovery disk is going to reinstall my drivers. And you're talking about Marvel Heroes.
Enough with the gaming stuff, come on. Let's get on the drivers.
All right. Well, we can't talk about my computer for an hour. We'll talk about something else.
Not because we have talked about it for 2 hours now.
Kind of going around the same questions. Yeah, right. Yeah. Where did it go?
Nowhere. It's still there.
Just a tip for people. When you're upgrading your home Windows 7 Home Premium to a Windows 7 Ultimate, click the upgrade button, not the complete copy over button. Yeah. Well, today, though, no link or transition computers.
Just a complete reboot.
Oh.
Hey-o.
You know what's funny? Is how funny you think that is. You're just sitting there quietly, chuckling to yourself. You can't even speak.
He's still going.
It's a positive feedback loop, because you guys were laughing too.
Oh, okay. Nice one, Wayne. Well, we're doing the third in our Warrior series, and as promised, it's Legionaries. Yeah, the Romans. So, like the previous Warrior series, what we'll do is not give an exhaustive study on Roman legionaries or the Roman army. What we'll do is we're going to highlight certain aspects of the Roman legionary that we think are pretty interesting, maybe not unique, and fairly applicable to any character that you play in your game. So first off is Virtus versus Disciplina. That was a lot easier than
Yeah. Icelandic. Yeah, no Icelandic, no sing-songy voice. Yeah. Right.
No Italian accent, yeah. Despite how applicable it would be.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. It just doesn't sound, my Italian accent doesn't sound very badass.
This is true.
But it's supposed to discipline him.
We are going to kill him.
You're channeling Mario. Mario never sounds very threatening.
I learned my stereotypical accent off of a stereotypical plumber. Oh my God.
So Virtus is courage and Disciplina is discipline. Oh. Should have dragged that out more, right? Yeah. So a little background on that is a lot of people credit the Roman success to discipline. Even like contemporary historians would talk about how strong their discipline was. And, you know, the historians or the commentators in like the 15th century onwards would focus on that. But historians are now looking and saying, no, they actually weren't that disciplined. So it's kind of in contrast to the thin red line of the British soldier, where discipline is kind of like giving them that courage. For the Romans, discipline was stopping them from going crazy.
Yeah, it is kind of like a reverse of what we would normally consider discipline.
Yeah. Some modern historians are now saying that don't think of the Romans as a disciplined army in the modern sense, because they weren't necessarily. They were very much a very kind of primitive, animalistic, aggressive army that the leaders were constantly using discipline to try to hold them back, like a chain.
Hmm. Yeah. I now have this image of like this rabid Roman dog on a chain.
It is cool. But both of Disciplina and Virtus are way back to the early Republic. When you read the stories of their battles, it's constantly of a very aggressive army, always just looking for the fight. And that's how guys like Hannibal were able to beat the Romans, because they knew it was like, well, their first instinct is just to attack. So they would play on that.
So maybe like a slight tangent, but I know like when we talked about like other warriors, especially like Vikings, I guess they kind of like the classic image of a Viking is like this savage will just kind of like keep attacking regardless of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I guess actually that would kind of apply to like the Roman legionaries.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be what they would do. They just kind of like the average individual guy would just kind of keep attacking and say, no, the hell with orders or what I've been told to do. I'm just going to keep attacking because that's what I want to do.
If we look at the Hoplites, our first Warriors episode, and we're kind of like saying you play them as demigods. But when you play a Roman legionary, you play him as a man's man. That makes sense?
Yes, indeed.
Well, if your image of a man's man is, you know, that as opposed to sitting here brewing tea.
that would not be a man's man. That would just be technically a man.
When I was looking it up, the first definition I saw for Virtus was doing the right thing. And right was defined as the thing that a proper moral Roman man should do. But I was actually a little bit confused by that, is because there wasn't a further explanation as to what a Roman man should do.
Well, it should obviously be a man's man.
Yeah, obviously. Not brew tea. Not brew tea. Charge into battle.
Either that or brew tea. Not complain about
remember
it being
to install
bitter.
Their drivers. Yeah.
Yeah, you could translate it as martial courage or manliness. Mm-hmm. So I guess very much the man's man. You know, and doing what is right, however you define a man.
Hairy chest. I don't know.
Have that. Beards went in and out of fashion, actually.
Oh, I see. Very interesting.
Is it?
No.
But I think some interesting things, for example, Hannibal is beating the Roman armies that they're sending. It's like the Battle of Cannae, where a Roman army was massacred, the actual general, the leader in charge there. And one of the reasons was because they were too aggressive. The Roman citizens or the Roman Senate didn't censor the general because they thought, oh, thank you for not, you know, despairing of the Roman qualities. You know, you had confidence in Rome. Sure, we lost them. That's also, I guess, related to the virtue of Virtus, is that the Romans just, one person said, they didn't necessarily win wars, they would just outlast the enemy.
That was one of the things that I read as well, that the Romans didn't have a problem with just sending people over and over again, regardless of how many died until they won the fight.
Yeah, and that's how they won, like, the Punic Wars, and that's how they eventually beat Hannibal. Sure, the Scipio Africanus came in, and he was a tactical genius.
What a great name.
Yeah, or even a better name, but probably not as good of a general, is Fabius Maximus.
Oh, that's good. Nah, I like Scipius. That's cool.
Scipio.
Oh, Scipio, even better.
Yeah. Fabius Maximus, who, I mean, he looked at what Hannibal was doing and saying, well, he's using our aggression against us. Mm-hmm. So he kind of did like stalling tactics. And when Hannibal would try to like get him to battle on, of course, Hannibal's terms, he would like avoid it. And he would just kind of shadow Hannibal's army. It was actually kind of wearing Hannibal down in a kind of an oblique way. But the Romans were like, hey, wait, where's the fight?
Yeah,
you're supposed to like go fight him. You know, what are you, a coward? And again, when we think about the discipline, the Roman soldiers would, of course, there's a very harsh punishment. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But they were constantly questioning and disobeying the leaders, because if, you know, the leaders were trying to do some sort of defensive or overly clever tactic, they were like, no, let's just like, you know, standard to standard and fight them.
I remember you mentioning in a previous podcast, the soldiers went out and they were trying to capture the heads of the enemies.
Oh, yeah.
And then they stopped it later on. Was there like a specific honor for being the one to kill the most enemies, or like being in the squad that succeeded the best? I'm wondering was it just that they were really aggressive, or were there benefits to being so aggressive?
There are benefits to being so aggressive. And of course, just the glory, but then, of course, they get awards in that, which are our next topic.
Well, couldn't that also kind of tie into, like, that's what it meant to be a man's man? So, look how manly a man of I am.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Like, is it a matter of honor? You know, when they go home, they say, you're the most manly, you can now grow a beard.
Well, one of the things, you know, we talked about trophies, the Greek trophies, which would be armor, and they would like prop it up on the battlefield.
Yeah.
The Romans would actually take it and then display it in their homes.
Oh, yeah. They were big into looting, huh?
Yeah. So if you walked into somebody's home and you see all these sets of armor, and it's like, wow, you know, this guy's a man.
Beard or not.
Beard or not, yeah.
Kind of going back to the fact that the Romans were just kind of willing to like throw endless waves of soldiers that their enemies would kind of like outlast. That also kind of ties into, I guess, a man.
Should clarify, it's not necessarily they would have.
Well, not like an endless wave of after wave, but just like what you said about they didn't necessarily win wars, they just kind of outlasted their enemy. And you know, they just kind of like stretched the fight on.
Yeah, it's more like they stretched the war on. It was like Hannibal would destroy an army, and then the Romans would, okay, let's raise another army and go get them.
Army.
Yeah, and hence my point of like, how do you raise another army? You have kids, which ties back into like being that man's man.
Oh,
all right, get back
go.
In the kitchen, woman, or, you know, or
well,
the kitchen doesn't make sense. Yeah, exactly. As soon as I said it, I'm like, wrong room. All right.
Yeah. Maybe it's not the steeping that's making your tea bitter.
All right. I don't even know where to go with that anymore.
Get out of the kitchen, woman. But, you know, that's not to give the impression that that the Romans just dashed their soldiers against the rocks, of course. They were very, very, you know, hard, seasoned, and strong troops as well.
Yeah.
They were man's men.
Men's men, yeah.
Oh, and they got better. Like, they started as a militia. And then, as a campaign went on, of course, the soldiers get better. But in a militia, then you go back to your farms. So when they became a professional army during the Marian reforms, you know, then they constantly developed their craft. Killing.
Thanks for that.
Just in case we weren't sure.
Oh, there's the soldiers' craft. I thought they were making tea or something. I don't know.
There's another example of a general Paulus, and he's fighting a guy named Perseus. No, not the Perseus from Clash of the Titans.
Because that Perseus would have obviously whipped out his magic lightsaber and killed them all.
He was Greek. But there was some sort of battle that they were at a disadvantage. It was a set piece battle, pitch battle. So this Paulus he knew his soldiers were going to attack Perseus. So he tricked them and had them like line up, kind of like waiting for the perfect moment to attack in the blazing heat. So the soldiers got increasingly more tired. And then he said, okay, well, it's, you know, we're losing the light, so we'll finish the battle. And then the officer's like, wow, we still got a battle to fight. And he's like, oh, well, now the soldiers are too. Yeah, no, but it shows, like, even like a general, he has to trick his soldier, trick his army into not fighting because of what it was, they would have fought at a disadvantage.
Since we were talking about D&D 4E previously, at this, like, warlord feat or power popped into my head where it's like, you deny the target an attack because he just has to stand there and wait for the right moment. Then, like, oh, no. Psyched you out. You're just supposed to stand there.
The name of this power, be a dick.
Yeah, exactly. Or just the name of the power, stand in the sun.
Says I get increasingly weaker. Yeah. What I'm doing is like channeling your rage into a
ball of rage.
Ball of rage at me. There was one case where like Caesar, and he's fighting the Germans, and mm-hmm. then he was trying to, because of course, you know, the virtus, manliness, you don't want to retreat. That's definitely unmanly. So, but he realized he had to retreat to go and fight another battle. So he said, well, I'll grab like a quick victory, like a nothing, just a symbolic victory. So he did a feint, but the soldiers were like, hey, we like this. Let's just actually have the battle now. And of course, then they start fighting again at a disadvantage. And the reason why Caesar just wanted to do the trick. And then almost 700 soldiers got killed. No.
Well, you know, he could have spun it and like...
I know people are thinking, and we want to incorporate this into our character.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I guess they could say like, if you kind of took a little bit of like the general into your character, you'd be like, okay, no, we're not retreating because that's not manly. We're not retreating. There's just a bigger enemy over here. We're going to kick their butts first.
But we can see this one.
But no. But these guys are nobodies. We're going to go. We're going to go take care of the bigger threat.
But I got my sword already.
Yeah. And they're such pushovers. We just leave them there. We'll come back in a little bit. Yeah. And if you get there, oh, where's the enemy? Ah, oh, they must have left. Ah, oh, shoot. Sorry.
And then you are killed.
No, it's just that juxtaposition. You got what you want to do versus what you need to do.
And that's an interesting juxtaposition to put, especially in game terms, you know, because, you know, it's not that odd to create a character that's kind of that savage, raw, I want to go and fight kind of guy, but put into it to where he's, the rules around him are the things that are holding him back. Instead of the military pushing him forward to fight more, they're actually trying to restrain him. That mm-hmm. can be interesting, you know, that kind of the group that you're a part of is very restrictive as to what you can go and fight, even though you are a fighter.
Yeah, a lot of times when you make an aggressive character, you go all in, mm-hmm. and he's the savage, or she's the savage, the berserker. Mm-hmm. But this is, you know, you are renowned for your discipline, but it's a cage. Mm-hmm. It's a leash, and sometimes you will be unleashed, but then you also fall back on a very...
Let's slip the dogs of war, hey?
Right.
I was thinking, like...
I was sitting there going, should I, you know, make a joke on Cry Havoc? And I was like, oh, got nothing.
I'll just agree.
Yeah. And I was thinking, like, if you built a character like that, then, like, the other people in the party could kind of be, like, the chain that held you back. It could allow for some, like, interesting inter-party role-playing, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of, like, if you... work this kind of concept up with another player and say, okay, now you're going to be kind of the not a general, but you're going to be the one who's sort of like holding me back. So you're going to be the one who's going to, you know, kind of pull my chain and calm me down a little bit. Cause otherwise I'm just going to go not berserk, but I'm just going to be really aggressive. So.
Well, actually, that was my first inclination when I started looking at this, of what kind of character would I want to play. And I wasn't all that excited about the prospects of being one of the legionaries, but I was more interested in actually being the commander. Like, the commander rank was Centurion. Was that it?
It's one of the ranks. There's Centurion. It depends where they came in. There's Tribune. Mm-hmm. There's a Legate, which is kind of like, if you watch Spartacus. No, you haven't seen it.
Sorry, no.
Yeah. That would be like, Legate is a political appointment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just that role seemed really interesting to me. It'd be pretty different from a regular role playing game because you wouldn't see you wouldn't see much direct combat, but it would be kind of a mass battle thing, but I think it would be an interesting game to play. Because you don't have to have the political theater on one side and then, of course, the marshal on the other.
The Centurions actually had a higher fatality rate than the soldiers.
Did they charge into battle with them?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Front of the line?
It's probably not an exact... Mm-hmm. It's not an exact comparison, but they'd be like a sergeant major.
Okay.
Yeah. I forget. It's something like if the soldiers had a 1 in 70... fatality rate. The lead, the Centurions had like a 1 in 15.
See, that even sounds more interesting then, because in addition to having having those various aspects, I said political and martial and like taking care of all the different troops, then you would also have the combat there as well.
You also die a lot sooner.
Well, hopefully not. Maybe if you were playing something D&D-esque, you would have some pretty powerful dudes.
If you were playing D&D-esque, you wouldn't really have that many henchmen.
I was thinking something like, vampire. Mm-hmm. And if you play a Gangrel, you might really play up the animalistic aspect of playing the Gangrel vampire. Mm. But what if you put yourself in the boardroom? And you knew, just letting your aggressiveness a little bit, mm-hmm. or letting your aggressiveness out a little bit at a time is more effective. So you're constantly, you want to rip that guy's head off, but you're constantly, I'll do something else, I'll undermine him.
A slow trickle of constant rage rather than one huge explosion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, rage. Yeah.
Keep my car. Don't you know?
My chariot.
My stock options are.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, garbage. Who keeps my chariot?
Or you can think of the Ventrue, and their stereotype is like the corporate raider, the businessman, the police officer. But pretty much, corporate America or corporate Europe. But you could do it is like, they actually trace their lineage back to Rome and before that, Troy. Mm-hmm. So they would value virtues as much as disciplina. So even though they have the disciplined veneer, mm-hmm. like that Gangrel example, they're constantly at war with what they really want to do. And they're very masculine. So if you ever, masculine in, I guess, a gender neutral sense, we'll say.
Sure is a handsome woman.
I don't know. It's like, I don't want to say that you can't. Yeah. Just said virtuous manliness in a man's man, but. That's not to say that a female can't play a female character, or a male can't play a female character.
And in games, of course, you're allowed to do that. But, we are talking about ancient societies where, women were pretty much ignored. So.
Yeah. All right. So let's ignore political correctness. But yeah, you don't want to cross this Ventrue because they might unleash some virtus on their ass.
Yeah. The first system I thought of for this was, instead of Empire, was Savage Worlds. Just because it has a really nice mass combat system. And for me, the image of a legionnaire is going to war, these large battles.
So would you play the defensive leader against the aggressive soldier, or you play
I think I'd put the, I'd take all the PCs as the same rank of leader, be it centurion or one of the other leaders, so they get to draft their own battle plans, and suppose there's maybe a political element with other leaders mm-hmm. in the same encampment. Some want to be more aggressive, some want to hold back, or of course the character's own personalities can play into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I would do. What would you do?
I'm not sure. Playing a legionnaire, I guess. I could play GURPS or basic role-playing because they both have. GURPS has a Rome book. Basic role-playing has got the a Rome book.
Mm-hmm. Vampire has a Rome book.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
There you go.
I'd probably choose one of them.
I can't see why.
Actually, when preparing for this episode, I would look at things like Pathfinder and see, can I replicate the Roman Legionnaire? And I suppose I could. I guess you're multi-class fighter mm-hmm. with a little splash of barbarian.
Yeah, but really, what's the point if you have three other systems that already have it there for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why reinvent the wheel when you have a car right there?
Well, I guess the point, though, is to bring those aspects in. Virtus and disciplina to any character.
Right, right.
And how there'd be an internal war and an external war. Mm-hmm. I guess in a psychological sense, yeah. One thing you were talking about, a mass combat system, the Romans did were valued single combat. Mm-hmm. And it had a very ornate ritual.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I suppose thinking about it then, the gladiators and
Gladiators as well, of course, they like that. But even the soldiers, and that was one of the reasons why they would put the young people in the front, mm-hmm. the young guys in the front in the combat, because they would be even more aggressive than the older guys because they have something to prove.
Yeah.
So they might break off, but if you have guys in the back breaking off, then that causes a problem.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Well, so the next, contrast is awards or rewards versus punishment. Yeah. So I guess the famous punishment is decimation.
Which is what?
where you kill 1 in 10 guys if they've done something bad. Yeah. Turns out that the 90% didn't get let off the hook.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They lived.
Wow, but, that's kind of so suck for off them. The hook.
Yeah. Man, I wish I was one of that 10%.
Yeah, they would be humiliated. And of course, if one of your virtues is virtus, mm-hmm. Manliness, humiliation has a really...
Put on an apron and cook me a pie.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like being...
You in the kitchen. Yep.
No.
Steep all our tea for dinner.
Like, do you want to hear the real punishment? No?
Yes, I do. Sorry.
I could go for a few more tea jokes.
We didn't even have tea.
That's how manly they were.
I feel humiliated that I can't get this thing that we don't even have. They would get a barley ration instead of a wheat ration.
Oh, snap!
I guess only women eat barley.
No, I mean, probably like shouting to the 10% being let off to be killed. And he goes, oh, but we're going to have to eat barley. Yeah. Yeah, at least they escaped that punishment. And then they have to like pitch their tents outside the rampart, which I guess is a humiliating spot too.
Well, that part even if it's not humiliating, I can kind of see that as definitely a punishment, because like you're now outside the fortifications, meaning like if something happens, yeah, you'll be wiped out first.
Yeah, but the Romans tended not to use their forts defensively. It was just like kind of a place to camp, mm-hmm. and then when there was a battle or an enemy attack, they would walk out or run out to fight them.
Maybe the outside the fort is where they dumped their chamber pots. Then I don't know.
Yeah. No, but it was just another punishment was to not wear a belt. As we found out, a belt was a bit of a status symbol or a way to show that somebody was a soldier. Mm-hmm. Because the soldier's tunic was a bit longer than the civilian's tunic. So they would wear belts. Mm-hmm. And kind of like a Japanese high school girl, they'll have their skirt might go to their knees when they leave the house, but when they get to school, they'll roll it up.
Lyle's so experts on many things, in fact, not just Romans.
Then they'll roll it up so it's shorter when they're at school with their friends, you know, mm-hmm. peer pressure. And then they'll roll it back down when they go home. So even though they had a longer tunic, the soldiers would roll it up so it was short. Hmm. I don't know why they would want a short tunic, but maybe it was just easier to
wear. Pressure.
Peer pressure. Yeah.
Show how manly you are. Whoa, look at all the hair on his legs.
That's not his legs.
Oh, jeez. Dude. Man, that's one manly man. He didn't even roll it up halfway. But anyway. What? So going way back to...
I should probably finish with the punishment.
Okay, sorry.
Gladius, you're just happy to see me.
So one of the punishments Augustus would do to the centurions is he'd make them stand outside his tent without their belts. And I guess that was a big humiliation.
Hiding their manliness.
Yeah, I guess so.
I guess, yeah.
That was a big humiliation.
Hmm.
Yeah. And of course, other things like crucifixion, being thrown to wild animals.
Oh, yeah, that's a little
none of those compared
more.
To nothing. Yeah. I can see like the 90% left, like they see the 1 in 10 being let off, and it's like, hey, at least they get to die with their belt on. I ain't got a belt anymore. Come on.
The Romans didn't really have a setting 5, did they? It was either 1 or 10. Let's see, what are we gonna do? No belt or thrown to the wolves.
No belt or crucifixion. Can I opt for crucifixion? No belt for you.
Well, they could get beaten with their vitus, with the centurion's cane, called a vitus.
Nah, that's about a 4. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, you haven't seen the centurion's cane shaped exactly like a belt, I'm sure. Well, do you see all the buckles on that thing? No way!
They actually did have a lot of buckles. For people who not familiar with Romans, who are they?
For all of you.
But if you look at like a space marine from 40K, They stole so much from the Romans.
Like the power armor.
Yeah, the power armor, the chainsword.
The bolter.
We'll get to that in a second. But you know how they have those...
belt.
Well, it's not really a belt because it's kind of stuck to the power armor, but those little like leather flaps.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times that would be on the belts.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Like these flaps and buckles. Mm-hmm. That'd be very ornate. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but with the centurion's cane, there was one centurion whose nickname was...
Caner. Sorry.
Was Sato... That wasn't even a question. Was Sato Alterum, which means fetch me another.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't think he's popular. Probably didn't say it to his face. And they called him Fetch Me Another because he would, like, break his cane off a guy's back, and then he'd go, Fetch Me Another.
I figured he was looking for another person to punish. It'd be a very convenient name to have while going to the bar, though.
Fetch Me Another?
Mm.
Oh, I see.
Mm.
That's what they did with all that barley.
Oh, making beer.
Mm. Yeah, I was back to the bell. I was wondering, so, like, in a previous episode, we talked about kind of the difference between, like, the different kinds of, not warriors, but the different kinds of, like, fighting people. So you'd have, like, you know, militia.
Oh, time warrior. For war.
Yeah.
And so, that comes from John Keegan, a historian, John Keegan.
Yeah, so I guess tying it into the belt thing, I'm wondering, would the legionaries wear their belt when they were, quote-unquote, off-duty? Like, was it, because again, I'm thinking of, like, the musketeers, and they always had, like, their uniform. Okay, yeah, I guess that means shut up. Okay.
No, they would, because it would mark them as a soldier. Mm. And they would have once they became professionals, and one of the reasons why they hit upon a professional army, not only because so many of them were dying and they actually needed them, but
they could beat them and not have people run away.
No, this guy named Marius, Cassius Marius, he was told he needed a volunteer army, and not enough of the land-owning Romans volunteered, so he opened up the franchise, if you will, to the poor Romans.
Hmm.
So from that point on, a lot of poor Romans would see the army as a very attractive career path.
Poverty, yeah.
And then you would instantly elevate your status.
I'm going to join the army and get me a belt. I'm tired of this toga being around my knees.
Contrast that with rewards, because they really valued things like decorations. Oh, there's an example where this ex-slave was put up for a decoration by his officer.
Mm-hmm.
But because he was an ex-slave, they initially refused to give it to him. So the officer said, well, I'll pay you gold, you know, which would have been worth more than the actual decoration itself.
Yeah.
But he refused the gold.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the compromise, they gave him a lower decoration, and he was happy with that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Again, that's kind of something interesting to work into a game, whereas it would be like instead of, you know, the typical dungeon-crawling adventure party, instead of, again, hauling out with all these armloads of gold, it'd be kind of like, no, we didn't really want the gold, we just wanted kind of the decoration and the status that brings and kind of the ramifications that would have in the game world.
I want another belt.
Yeah, bring me another.
Yeah, say to Otterum, fetch me another decoration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could say that's a level system or an experience point system.
Yeah,
is kind of like that. But sometimes you play a game. Some games lend themselves more to a character progressing, whereas something like when you're talking about Marvel heroic role playing, it actually doesn't lend itself.
No, it doesn't.
Terribly well to progressing because it's powers or whatever. But you could then add in certain rewards. When we played Vampire, I said you'll never have to buy merits after you do your starting character. You earn them through your play, and then they will be given to you. Like things like status, you shouldn't buy outright. It should be earned through your role play.
I played a miniatures game ages and ages ago, back when I was in high school. But you could advance the abilities of your troops with awards. If some guy was really good at charging and assault, you could give him an award, and you're supposed to buy a little thing and glue it onto the model. But you could increase model stats by that way. So it's kind of similar to that.
Yeah, people play like Warhammer 40K. Some of the magic items, if you read them, like the laurels of victory.
Mm. I think some of the Space Marines things were you could. If you represent it on the model, you could give them a +1 or something like that. But, you know, you could do that in a regular game as well. You know, these awards have a mechanical benefit to them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it could be like getting a status point, just having this decoration.
And you know, if you consider it, they actually would. You know, if you have a soldier and he's got this big medal and he's walking through town, he garners more respect than other people does. So he would have a better ability at convincing or whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's how I would do it. Like, however the mechanics work in the game, I don't think I would give it a mechanical bonus, but it would only be a status mechanical bonus, and whatever status did in that game would just have a better chance of doing it. Like, I guess you could do, like, a class and level system like D&D, where, it does represent, like, the person getting better, but then if their level actually was, like, their status, then...
I'd give them +10 to magic and blood spurts.
Blood spurts?
Yeah.
We might say that they would fight even harder because they expand it to the standards. And of course, the Romans really valued their standards, and they would have different types. They would have like the eagle or the aquila.
That was the standard one, right? The eagle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The standard.
But then they would also have lesser standards as well. And they would add different things to those standards. But losing a standard was considered a grounds for decimation.
Absolutely. But that's very true. I mean, that was one of the biggest dishonors that a fighting unit could have, is to lose a standard.
There's a good example where Augustus, when he came into power, one of his greatest triumphs did not occur on the battlefield, but was when he negotiated with the Parthians the return of two eagle standards.
Wow. Hmm.
And the Romans were delighted.
Well, I've read one story when the Romans were invading Britain by sea. Some of the soldiers were, I guess maybe it was the Saxons at the time, they're massed on the shores, so they looked really imposing. So the Romans were reluctant to jump off the boats and charge, but the standard bearer, he jumped by himself, started running towards the opposing forces, and nobody wanted to lose that standard, so they all jumped in after him. There's another one too, where this is just an example of one of the standards, that it was an actual eagle in a cage mounted on the guy's spear. I thought that was pretty cool.
I've never heard of that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I know they did use a lot of, the standard bearers would wear animal pelts, mm-hmm. and they would stand out that way.
Hmm. That's kind of interesting. I'm just wondering how often they had to change that eagle.
Shoot the eagle.
Oh, I was thinking it's like,
we brought it back.
In a cage. Oh, who forgot to feed the standard? Oh.
And again, it's that, I guess, the two sides. Maybe it gives you bonuses or not, but it's also having that decoration is also like a great responsibility. Mm-hmm. Just like the standard, perhaps if that's around you, you can all rally around it. But if you lose it, then that will have severe consequences.
You're eating barley.
And it's not even just like an external consequence. Internally, you would feel, no, we've got to get that back.
Yeah.
Well, I know you just said that Marvel Heroic wouldn't be that great for it, but just you said that double-edged coin made me think immediately of the aspects from Fate, which can be used either as a positive or a negative, or like the distinctions in Marvel.
Oh, yeah, like using it as standard. Sorry, I just said a level progression.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We haven't played Marvel Heroic role-playing enough to see our superheroes progress, mm-hmm. but you're kind of just going to play them at that level.
Well, right. Yeah.
Awesome.
When 11!
Exactly.
When you start at God, thing. Where do you go from there?
Uber God.
Yeah. And it kind of also gets into another type of humiliation that we might not understand. But there's an example where the Samnites trapped the Romans in like a valley, and they only had like two ways out, and they blocked both of them, so the Romans were stuck there. So the leader calls his father, who was like this great general before him, and says, what should we do with the Romans? And he goes, kill them all or let them all go without consequences. And he's like, what do you mean? He said, well, you kill them all, it'll take a while for them to raise another army. Ha, not that long. Or let them all go, and then Roman, you'll have good relations with Rome. But the young guy decided, no, we'll let them go, but we'll make them walk under a yoke, which is just like a kind of a stick. But apparently that was really humiliating. So the Romans, like, they let them go, but because they made them walk under the stick, they're like, well, we want to just kill these guys and tear them apart. But you'd be like, hey, they kind of let you live. And they just made you walk under a stick. And they're like,
yeah, but it's what that stick symbolized.
They didn't take your belt or anything. It's like, that one. So just to kind of that mindset, when you have so much martial courage, so much manliness, that concept of man, that certain things have a much greater importance. So you can play on that as a game master, is the type of penalties. It doesn't always have to be physical.
Well, yeah. I mean, what we said before with them being really aggressive, can you imagine that kind of aggressive, bestial attitude being kowtowed and being forced to do mm-hmm. something they didn't want to do, or something considered humiliating?
Yeah.
Walk under the stick. Oh, snap. No, you didn't.
Oh, really? Oh, no, you're dead.
Come on.
It's just a limbo. Roman just comes and breaks the stick. There'll be no limboing in my party.
Guts the most.
So, I mean, we've talked about the decorations, we've talked about the standards. So these are, and belts, of course. as you expected.
Indeed.
The listeners were like, well, you got to talk about the belts. And we did.
Our top request, actually.
So the other equipment, of course, is their weapons and armor.
You don't say. Excellent.
And where to go from there? Of course, it changed to Republic, late Republic, early Imperial, late Imperial, but I guess the classic Roman soldier is what we'll focus on, and that's the guy that has a helmet called, like, a Gallic helmet, and just any Roman movie did that helmet.
The Mohawk.
Not all of them would have that little plume. But again, I think we talked about this in Vikings, where why would you have that plume? And of course, it's not 100% why, but one of the reasons could have been it makes you look a little bit taller. It's a little bit more intimidating.
Out of curiosity, did the centurions have a slightly different helmet?
The pictures I saw had the plume, but it was side to side, like a peacock, mm-hmm. rather than front to back, like a mohawk. But I don't know if that was just the guys who were wearing that headdress liked that style.
They seem to have a slightly different helmet, but it was based on the same mm-hmm. helmet type. The Praetorian Guard, those were like the guys that protected the emperor. They would, I think they would often wear like Attica helmets, which are more... You ever buy like a little cheap Roman outfit as a kid?
Nope.
I did. Yeah. It's kind of like that.
Perhaps now,
you know that little... That's where it began.
Yeah. You know that useless visor that you sometimes see on Roman helmets?
Yeah. Okay.
Like it doesn't... I don't know if you call it a visor. Like it flips up and flips down.
Covers about half of your eyes.
But yeah, but doesn't really.
Uh-huh.
That's an Attica helmet. And then, of course, there's the Lorica segmentata. which is their plate armor.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
the strips. Yeah, like the banded armor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, their big shield, the scutum, and the standard sword would be the gladius.
Yep.
And the standard, long arm would be the pilum, which is kind of like a heavy javelin. Mm-hmm. Remember, we talked about in Vikings, how do they get around the shield?
Yeah.
The pilum.
Actually, you know.
Because it could punch through a shield.
I was looking up, and of all the pieces of equipment that I saw for the legionaries, the pilum was by far the most interesting. It was really, really well made. The design of it is it was a long stick, and it had a sharp and often serrated tip on it, but also it had a weighted ball in the front so that it gave it that extra heft to punch through a shield, possibly to reach the guy beside. But the best part was that they had two nails driven in the back of it, and they were driven into the grain of the wood so that it would bend or possibly even break after it hit the target, which means that the enemy, it would be harder to remove from the shield, and B, they couldn't use it to throw back at the Romans.
Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant. I mean, what an ingenious device.
Yeah, and they used it for a long time. A lot of the equipment changed, but the pilum stayed around for a long time.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that they didn't really have kind of archery lists in the way that it happened later on, but each soldier had a kind of artillery ranged with it, and they would use it as part of their charge to break the coming enemy line.
Yeah, and they would have to wait until it was effective at like 30 meters maybe,
mm-hmm.
maybe even less.
Yeah. Which is actually larger than I would have imagined.
30 meters is pretty long.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Maybe it's 15. Yeah.
It said 30.
Maybe 3.
I put a 0 on that.
3.
By throw, they kind of just released it after they stabbed the guy's head. But again, that's that discipline mm-hmm. is you got like a very aggressive army. So you can imagine the strength that they're going to put behind the pilum. But they also have the discipline to wait until the optimum time to throw it.
Right.
But also a guy like me, myself, I'd be so scared. I'd just chuck it immediately.
Not even out the enemy, just down
it goes
the
all
ground.
3 meters.
And I left my sword in the camp, so I'll go get that. Continue the battle.
Come back.
No,
oh,
but like,
they win? Oh.
If they were less brave, mm-hmm. they would, you know, you'd probably just, prematurely throw those.
Premature pilum.
premature pilum.
Oh, dude.
Which is not very masculine, you know? That's why when people have that problem.
You don't want to brag about that.
And you don't want to talk about the guy that can't get the pilum up to throw.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Pilum dysfunction.
But we were talking before the podcast, Chris, about what side they would wear the gladius.
Well, I tried
until,
talking.
Until you settled the debate.
I was cut off as if by a sharpened gladius, yes. Now, what I'd read is that there is a lot of debate over whether the Romans kept the sword on the right or the left side. The idea is, you know, naturally you draw across your body, but the sword arm would have been on the opposite side of the shield. But it's it would be on the same side that you hold your shield on. But it's kind of an inconvenient place to draw because you have your shield there.
I can see that.
Yeah, so there was a lot of debate over it. But you were saying, Lyle, that there is no
debate. He wasn't
anymore.
Saying, he declared.
The officers would wear it on the right, the left side.
Mm-hmm.
So the opposite side. And the average legionary would wear it on the right side. And the reenactors have tested it, and apparently they can pull the gladius quite easily.
Yeah, I can see. It's a short enough blade that you could pull it out without having to draw across your body.
But. So when they started, in the later imperial times, when they started switching into the longer spatha, which is the cavalry sword, so the early imperial would have the spatha as well, but it was primarily a cavalryman sword. But then they would have to switch to the left side. But I was just trying to think, and it's like one thing, I don't know if this is a deficiency of systems, but it just seems that the short sword should have a lot of punching power. Mm-hmm. And that's why they used the gladius for so long, is because it did have considerable punching power. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at like a system like D&D, it just seems like a poor man's cousin to a longsword.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, I see the gladius as being separate from a short sword. It's a heftier blade. Mm-hmm. And it's got that long, straight, instead of like a crisp blade, it's got that long, straight edge on it, which would make it really vicious as to hack and pull into something. Yeah. But it wouldn't have as much penetrative power, despite that it would be really strong in a thrust.
Apparently, they were good at thrusting and hacking. And one, I think some historians or some people that witnessed the Romans at war and fighting, obviously not modern day historians, they were horrified, just all the hacking that went on, hacking off the heads and stuff.
Yeah, one of the stories that I saw was at the Battle of Heraclea. I think I'm pronouncing that right. A centurion named Minucius. He was escaped death from one of the war elephants by just hacking its trunk off as it was coming towards him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did he do, like grab his trunk and like ride it, like Orlando Bloom style, while he was hacking
it? I don't know if maybe the elephant was bearing down upon him and he ran forward with it, or if he got it in just one blow, or maybe one or two, but, I mean, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Hey, this says they would even use their teeth as weapons. When they were digging up the bodies after the Battle of Cannae, they found this one Carthaginian with a Roman like on top of him or something, and the Roman had gnawed off his nose.
Jeez.
It was like a big crush, and he's just like, oh, I got nothing. I just use my teeth.
Wait, I got something.
Getting back to the gladius and how it's kind of not, it's not well represented in the system. I think it's, depends how realistic you want your weapon damage to be.
Yeah.
You know, eventually, if you just kind of break into like light, heavy, and great weapons are like, yeah, if you just break it into kind of categories, then honestly, there's not that much die variation, and it's just more bookkeeping to keep track of. But I mean, if you're using a system where there's different types of damage, like the D&D 3.5, like slashing, piercing, and bludgeoning, well, then you could kind of do it, you know.
Right.
The gladius is just a short sword that maybe does a die type higher if you use it as piercing, as opposed to slashing.
Yeah.
And Pilum is pretty unrepresentative. They would often have the javelin, but a Pilum would probably be more accurately described as a heavy javelin.
Yeah, I think it was maybe spear would be closer. I mean, now we're just splitting hairs over it, really.
No, it was kind of in between them. Mm-hmm. So
in between them, like this cut in the hair.
All right. Another pity laugh. thanks,
Wayne. I'm used to pity laughs. If it's all I get, I take it.
But apparently they were they were really good at getting through armor of the era, especially leather armor, because the Romans did have, in the later periods, the Romans did have good steelworking techniques. Mm-hmm. So they could slice right through leather armor.
I guess that kind of takes into weapons into account, too, because, I mean, if you look at, like, the standard D&D thing, they have to account for a lot of weapons and a lot of types of armor. So, obviously, like, kind of lesser weapons are going to be less effective against certain types of armor. But if you're doing, like, a period piece where the heaviest armor people are going to have is like leather or some kind of like reinforced leather, well, then the short sword doesn't seem so sucky, you know? So I think if you scale it kind of to mirror the historical era, then you'll be able to do more things with it, where if you're just trying to have rules that tackle a broad scope of types of gear and equipment.
Yeah, if you were going to go with that, I think a short sword would probably have a better penetrating ability against armor, but as far as actual rote damage on a thrust, I think the gladius would be better. And boots. Boots are cool.
Oh, you were talking about the hobnail boots.
Yeah. Oh, I heard it as a piece of trivia from a friend of mine who's a historian, but it's not, I actually couldn't find a piece of something on the internet to corroborate it.
But, corroborate the historian.
Yeah. So not quite sure what that means. But he said that one of the reasons that the Romans invented their boots, they put hard leather on the bottom of their sandals, and it was so that they could get that marching sound when they marched over the hill, because it would intimidate the enemy. Long before they could see the army, they could just hear this thunder of them coming.
Well, they definitely made use of intimidation, as we talked about before. Early Republic, it would be to yell and scream. Early Imperium, it would be to say nothing and be silent, because it would be such a shocking contrast to their enemies. And then late Imperium, they adopted something from the Germans. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because there was a lot of Germans in the Roman army at that time. But it would be, it sounds pretty cool. It starts as a low murmur and then gradually builds to a roar.
Kind of like the Klingon death roar.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. Does it start as a low murmur?
I was kind of thinking maybe like a sports game.
Like?
The crowd of the sports game.
Defense.
No, I wasn't thinking that. I was just thinking, you know, you get a lot of people together, they start to get excited, and eventually, you know, goes up.
It sounded a little bit more orchestrated than just people getting excited.
Well, obviously. But,
offense.
All right.
Yeah, that would be the Roman name. Right. Pull the goalie.
And it'd be like,
get an extra attacker on there.
It'd be like, Virtus. Right. Virtus.
Oh, we're ahead now. Disciplina.
But, you know, I've always been impressed by those kind of war rituals, the war cries and stuff, like the Maori haka.
Oh, yeah, the All Blacks do that a lot, eh?
Every time I see it, like, it gives me a little chill down the spine. I think it's really, really cool.
Now, what would you do if you were a rugby team and the All Blacks are doing their haka? Would you be... I know what the French team does. They do that thing that the French teams always do where they put their arms around each other and stand in a line.
Yeah, the English pretend that they're bored. Kind of just wander around.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
The Australians try to act really respectful because I guess they get into a lot of trouble politically if they don't.
Yeah, I suppose. It's really hard. Remember we talked about, you know, like villains monologue and sometimes heroes will do that rousing speech beforehand. But a lot of times in a game, you don't have that opportunity because a lot of times you have like an initiative mechanic. But it would be good if you could just work in your I mean, sometimes they'll have like a war cry, but it's just like a war cry, but this is like a chant. Yeah. Or the silent thing, that is intimidating, the guy that fights silently.
And, you know, I think that would work better at the game table than like a war cry or something, just because for the game master, it'd be hard to represent there's, you know, you're facing 1,000 warriors in pelts screaming at you now. It doesn't seem that intimidating, but...
Really? Sorry to cut you off.
Sitting at the table, like, they're roaring at you, it's okay, yeah, they're roaring, but...
Well, what if you tried to imitate, you know, in Gladiator, and the Germans are all in the forest, and you hear the, ooh,
yeah.
Yeah, I think you could do that a little bit.
Mm.
This is just very mechanical, but I mean, couldn't you just say, yeah, and I mean, as the game master or the DM, it's kind of your job to set the scene, so you could just say, yeah, they're chanting, and it's actually scary. Everybody give me, if you're using Savage Worlds, everybody gives me a guts check. A will check.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
I don't know.
Fear is always a tough mechanic to play because it's like, you're afraid now. Oh, okay, so can I not? Yeah.
My aim would actually to rouse some emotion in the players rather than in the characters. But
As Lyle said, I think that's really hard to do.
Oh, definitely.
But I mean,
definitely.
I didn't say it was hard to do. Chris did.
Or maybe not just then, but... All right.
Once upon a time, you did say that.
Yeah. Did I?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm contradicting myself.
All right. So you didn't say it. So anyway, yeah, I'm agreeing with Chris.
I'm right.
How did I end up losing this argument? It's like...
I don't know, but I'm happy. I don't win so often.
But I didn't even know I was arguing a side. I thought I was arguing the other side.
That's the only way we can win in a debate against you.
Is convincing when you don't know you're not arguing.
No, you were arguing the other side. Was I?
It's like call you up one day, Lyle, man, you suck. You lost.
Yeah, right? I think you could do it. Yeah, I guess I've changed my mind. Yeah, you could do it, you know, like in Gladiator. But I agree with you, Chris. I thought it always was, but I agree with you that, yeah, it's better to do that role-playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the players are going to, you know, piss themselves or listening to your mock cry, but...
That's why
I was saying... But it'll kind of get more involved in the game.
That's why I was saying that I think the silent treatment would be better, more effective, because if you're going up against, say, a fantasy war, you kind of expect them to do out the war cry beforehand, but if you describe it as this army that's just completely silent, not a single man is speaking... To me, that seems a little creepier. Maybe just because it goes against expectation.
Just a little bit off topic, but I don't think people do that enough when they have undead.
The
fact that they aren't doing anything. You just hear like the clatter of the armor or the clattering of the die hitting the table. Yeah.
Again, not to be contradictory, but isn't that a little bit of the same thing? Like, either way you do it, the GM will have to tell the player something, whether it's, and they're absolutely silent. They're not making any sound at all. Or whether they're saying, and they're having this war cry, they're shouting. So,
yes.
I realize they're both kind of the same thing, And yeah, you want to evoke some kind of reaction in the players, but I don't know really how you would do that other than just to kind of tell them and kind of hope that the players roleplay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you could use sound effects, and that might sound a bit of an oxymoron when we're talking about silence, but if you do just have the clatter of like movement as opposed to like voices or shouts, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. that would be the silent thing.
If you could somehow have
the boot stamping into the ground.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, if you could somehow have like background noise playing in the background and then you stopped it, you know, then actually it would be silent. I mean, again, it's a lot of setup for possibly very little payoff.
Well, when we played D&D, I always played music in the background for it, and it was almost always a Conan soundtrack. But if there's kind of just this ambient noise level and then you cut it off and suddenly the room is silent, that might make a something more impressive. Mm. I don't know. Something worth trying.
Well, then crank it up.
Put on your Viking death metal and then...
Whoa, I thought we were fighting orcs. What are these Viking death metal stuff?
Well, that was Warriors Legionaries.
Yep.
I think we can now get back to fixing my computer.
We came, we saw, we podcasted.
Yeah.
We need wiki podcasts? No? Okay. All right, cool. Well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to us there on the website through iTunes, through Stitcher, or download episodes on DriveThruRPG. Post something in our forums or on our website or on Facebook or on Twitter or... Yeah, anywhere. Send us an email. Just try and get a hold of us because we love hearing from all of you guys. And thank you very much. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.